It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, we are living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on a beautiful Saturday morning, let me just say this. And we are very fresh and ready to go today, let me just say that.
You're going to start with a lie to the folks? The beauty of radio is they can't see how haggard we are right now.
Oh, it's been a rough 24 hours for the three of us sitting in here, but we are here ready to rock and roll this morning. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul, and a very busy and a very ragged and a very intense working man sitting to my right. My co-host, the best in the business from the Burlington Free Press, Austin Danforth. Good morning, my man. Thank you for making it this morning. I know you've had a busy week.
Don't want to miss it. Never do.
Let me tell you, you're looking sharp today, though.
Well, when you get 5.5 hours of sleep, you got a 10-12 hour day ahead of you. You got to roll out ready to go.
And our boy Aaron Wells is home sick. I guess he's dealing with some flu-like symptoms. So, when in doubt, you bring in the Mariano Rivera of producers here. We've got the man. You probably recognize the voice coming in, but Brady Farkas, I just made him stop and put his sandwich down. He's going to have to talk. Welcome to Sports Saturday, my buddy.
What's up, boys? A little earlier than I like on the weekend, but I see what you guys deal with all the time. So
yeah,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the group.
Would you have preferred a Mariners closer reference to Mariano Rivera?
I tried, but I couldn't remember one.
I could have been Kazuhiro Sasaki. I could have been J.J. Putz. I could have been Edwin Diaz, but instead I am...
You're the greatest of all time.
Hey, that's fine.
You'd rather me call you a Putz?
This I met J.J. Putz once. He was a great guy.
I bet he is.
And I played catch in the outfield. He was great. But no, this harkens back to my first ever radio show when I had 9 a.m. and I'd be in there at like 7:15 every Saturday morning. You could do nothing on Friday night. Everyone's like, hey, let's go out to the bar. And you're like, no, I got to get up at 6:30 to get in the studio at 7:15. So this is the life you guys live every weekend.
So are you alpha dogging Austin and I right now, Brady? Like, you're the big time now, you're mid-afternoon, your drive home show, and now it's just me, poor me, and Austin every Saturday morning is struggling ourselves.
No, I still
the
get
three of us coming in here dragging ourselves
the weekend
day.
Crew
we,
mop
we,
up.
Right, exactly. We have no life. We have nothing going on. We have nothing to do except come in here and do this show one day a week.
I'm saying
alpha dogging us right now.
I'm saying it's difficult to know that you can't have fun on Friday nights to get up this early on Saturday. That is a difficult life choice that you have to make.
Unless you love what you do, my brother, and love coming in here Saturday mornings to do what we do here on Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game. See what I'm doing here? You see what I'm doing? I'm shifting on him.
You know,
I'm
right in his kitchen this morning. And I'm going to shift that back real quick because there have been some, since you guys are in here only on Saturday, you haven't noticed all the studio improvements that have happened throughout the week. And I've complained about this to no end during the week, and I'm going to complain about it to you guys also. One, have you noticed the new computer setup, that the computers are now up high as opposed to down low?
I did notice that.
I cannot see you because...
Right.
So we can, like, the computers are blocking me from even seeing Jeff. I feel like I am at your restaurant in Williston having to, like, lean underneath one of those things and say, like, hey, I'll take 2 large slices of cheese and a Diet Coke, please.
And maybe that's why I feel so at home. This is what it's like for me at Romanto.
Or I feel like I'm at a bank where you have to like lean your head awkwardly to the side to talk through that little megaphone and the person on the other end. Like, can I get this deposited and can I get back some tens and twenties, please?
But you see, none of these problems I can deal with and I can even understand because you're both very tall and I'm very short. So in most cases, Brady, you're very tall, so I can just see your shoulders. But in most cases, I can see under everything. So I don't understand. I have no big person problems here. None of that.
Must be a charmed life you lead.
Well, listen, I'm Jeff Paul. You know what I mean? 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. You can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line as well, that's what the peeps are doing now, man. They text. You know, a lot of people are texting
it's
now.
It's a hive of activity.
It is. We got all kinds of things going on here. So we've got all this new equipment, and now you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. You can call us. But a lot to talk about today. We've got a great show lined up today. But listen, some things that happened this week. Obviously, we mentioned in the sports update, the Bruins are one game away from being eliminated from the Stanley Cup Finals, and the St. St. Louis Blues being the champions of the NHL. I don't think anybody saw that coming. In retrospect, in the NBA, if someone told you the Raptors would be up 3-1 going into game five. That'd be amazing conversation.
It'd be laughable. Like if you'd have come to me with that in, you know, pick a month.
Exactly.
I'd be laughing.
It would really be laughing. And both of those teams, I think the favorites in both of the championships are potentially out after the next game. That's pretty crazy stuff if you're looking at the two major sports right now.
Yeah, it's a wild place to be. But, I mean, hockey, that can happen. I mean,
there's no question about it.
Series tied 2-2, you get into that game five and you can just tell the sticks are gripped a little tighter, the game plan is wound a little tighter, you could see it from the start, it was all right there that, you know, this, the over wasn't going to hit on Thursday night.
Right, right.
And, you know, the result, you know, you get the Blues taking the one game lead, that late penalty that wasn't against the Blues may right. fire up the Bruins going forward. That could make this game six even more interesting. If they can take something out of that, then hey, we got game seven playoff hockey.
And I think you're still comfortable.
That's sports drugs.
It is. And I think you're still comfortable if you're a Bruins fan. I think the Bruins are still the better team in this situation. But you got to give the Blues a ton of credit. Not that anyone's not giving them a ton of credit, but they've really brought the fight to Boston. I think going into the series, the expectation was that Boston was going to roll over them. They kind of like they've rolled over everybody else. I think when Tampa Bay lost in the first round, everybody kind of felt like this was Boston's to lose. Mm-hmm. St. Louis has really brought the fight to the Bruins. And the Bruins, and to me, the Bruins haven't quite stepped up to that challenge of what the Blues have become the bully. You know what I mean? At least in my opinion. Going into the series, I thought that the Bruins were the bully. Right now, I feel like the Blues are the bully.
Yeah.
Tell me how you guys feel about this, because I've been complaining at Rich about this for the last day and a half. So I got to get your opinion. Jeff, are you a one call wins or loses you the game? Like that missed tripping call, it was a missed call. The referees missed it. Are you in the referees cost us the game camp because of that one missed call? Do you believe that?
I don't. You know, we're going to talk about that later on about if we feel officials have become too much of a problem. If we do have an epidemic in all major sports that officiating and umpiring and refereeing has been a real problem there. I would say that one call, obviously, I would never say that changes the dynamic of a win or a loss. And it was a big play, obviously. The Bruin that was knocked down felt the penalty was coming. He did not react. The guy was wide open, ended up scoring the goal to win the game. Mm. It's a big play. We go back to talking about the NFC Championship game with the no pass interference call against New Orleans and the uprising over that, the fact that the officials allowed that to happen. But nobody wants to talk about the play calling by the Saints leading up to that play that kind of defines the game. Bad calls happen all throughout the process, but I would never focus on that one situation causing a win or a loss. The Bruins didn't play very well in that game, and you kind of felt that they would, especially with Chara taking the ice after he had with a broken jaw. You're at home. You kind of feel comfortable about those things. So I'm not sure if that one play determined whether you win or lose the game, but obviously a goal being scored on a no call makes people feel that way.
Yeah, Brady, I fall into the camp like, I think it's a case-by-case basis. I'm not a hardliner, it does or doesn't. I think there's plenty of times, more often than not, it's a case of that one call doesn't change a game because a game is made up of, you know, X teen number of plays. But you get, like, certain
moments happen.
I'm thinking of, like, when Jeff coaches a soccer game, and if it's a 1-0 game and the one goal comes on a play that's a fluke or a mistake or something, you can invariably say that call or that play lost the game.
And it's more comfortable, obviously, to blame it on that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to blame on, oh, you know, there's a bad call there and the goal happened or somebody made a big layup or there's a, you know, the other day, you know, and again, we're talking about a baseball game in May, but I watched, you know, Masahiro Tanaka was mowing down Toronto the other day, throws a 2-2 pitch down the middle of the plate. The umpire calls it a ball. It messes with Tanaka's mind. The next pitch is hit for a home run. He implodes and the Yankees end up losing a ball game. So bad plays and bad umpiring happen all the time.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at the overall mentality of what happened to the Bruins, they scored one goal in three periods. If you're only going to score one goal in three periods, you're probably not going to win the hockey game.
Exactly.
My favorite take in sports is when somebody goes, baseball game, guy's on first, he tries to steal second, gets thrown out, next pitch gets hit for a home run. They go, well, if he didn't get thrown out, it would have been a 2-run homer. Well, no, that's not the case either. Because you don't know exactly what would have happened.
It's very true.
The pitcher pitches differently when the guy's on base versus when the guy's not on base. The defense is shifted in a different way. The pitch calling is different potentially. So that's my least favorite thing. You never have any idea exactly how these are going to go after the call in question. And you guys are smart. I want to bring you out of the weekend shift now and bring you into the week and send Rich and Arnie down.
We're getting
here.
The call up.
because
couple righties.
I believe that when I see it.
I want to go to the pen and bring some smart people up to the weekday show because, I mean, it's just for these guys to sit here and say, oh, that one call can cost you a game. Well, no, it can't because, as Jeff, to your point, the Bruins outshot the Blues 18-7 in the first period. They had several point-blank chances and could not beat Jordan Binnington. Charlie McAvoy missed a shot later in the game also. Johansson missed a shot later in the game. Like, it certainly didn't help matters, but to sit here and say that there was 51 minutes played before that call that you didn't do anything.
Right. And yeah. Jeff, you hit on a minute ago the outcry over officiating and like the idea that officiating is a problem now. People have been officiating games for 150 years.
Agreed.
I think, if anything, it's a problem of the moment and the lens through which everybody looks at the games. The money, the stakes are heightened. So when there are bad calls, human error made in these games, then yeah, everybody who has so much invested in these games, time, money, what have you, you know, they're going to look, the officiating's the problem. The officiating, they can't keep up. They're humans trying to keep up with humans, and the humans they're trying to keep up with keep getting faster. And that's not that, like, there's a reason the athletes are playing the game and the refs are reffing the game.
Well, we are definitely going to touch on that later on the show. We have a great show, like I said, lined up with you. We're going to talk more about the Bruins and obviously the Blues. We're going to talk a bit more about the NBA Finals. And we have Andy Vasquez from The Record coming on. He's the New York Jets insider. A lot of things happening with the New York Jets. He's going to join us at 10:40. I know we've got a lot of listeners that get mad because we don't talk enough about the New York football Jets. So we're going to talk about the Jets.
Who are
today.
They? Listen, who are these listeners?
What color are their
jerseys?
Well,
these are the listeners that listen to us on Saturday. But here,
Jan and Underhill's the only Jets fan.
I get a lot of texts from people that listen to us that want to know what's going on with the New York Jets. And I think the Jets are kind of an interesting story right now, if you want to look at it. Just signed a new GM last night, Joe Douglas. He was the Eagles vice president of player personnel. He's supposed to be the guy that Adam Gase wants. They built really... You're giving Adam Gase the keys to the Beamer, for the lack of a better expression there, in terms of what the New York Jets are. Le'Veon Bell is talking some big, you know, some big talk. We know what we feel about the quarterback with the New York Jets. There's some excitement there. And then I wanted to get to my next point here about, I don't know if any of you guys, you guys probably talked about during the week, but the Tom Brady tweet this week, as they went to mandatory camp this week. Did you see his tweet
No.
this week? So he tweets a picture.
Oh, this is social media season. This is the...
It's kind of a cryptic tweet.
It's going to
take me to the Green City Garage poll question. Go ahead.
I know, I'm just saying, everybody's favorite time of year. There's two different favorite times of year. One is football is so out of season that we're reading into social media, and the other one is which NBA player bought real estate in which city, so now we know where they're going.
Well, So Tom Brady posts a picture, though, of him at training camp.
Okay.
And it says, to the effect, and I don't have it in front of me, but to the effect, something like, playing like...
Treat my first like my last and my last like my first.
Okay, so painting a picture that potentially this could be his last one, this could be the last time he's playing, this could be his last season. And that takes me to the Green City Garage poll question today, which you can go to at 101.3 The Game on Twitter, in Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, phone number 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage. I've said this to you guys many, many times when you're talking about Green City Garage. No problem is too big. No problem is too small. No question is too small. And no question is too ignorant, because I ask him questions weekly, and I'm very ignorant when it comes to cars. I'm telling you right now, he makes you feel safe, home. He takes good care of you. And he's also environmentally friendly, which is really good. Check out Green City Garage. The poll question today is for Patriot fans. Like you, Austin. The
yes.
question is, what's going to be tougher for Pats fans? Brady's retirement or Bill Belichick's?
Belichick.
Really?
Yeah. There's been one Bill Belichick. There's been a lot of very good quarterbacks.
Well, Tom Brady is arguably the greatest quarterback to live.
There's only been one very good, great... I'll use the word great.
Yeah.
There's only been one great quarterback that's been with Bill Belichick for 18, going on 19 years. His name's Tom Brady.
It's true.
So... I'm in the Belichick camp.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would vote for Belichick as well. But I got to say, for Patriot fans, seeing Tom Brady not under center for the Patriots has got to be a difficult process. I mean, you're not just talking about a good quarterback. You're not talking about a good quarterback of the era. You're talking about a quarterback that arguably is the greatest quarterback to ever live, to ever play in the NFL. A guy that literally, with Bill Belichick, hand in hand, have truthfully kind of turned the page here in terms of what the Patriots were, what they were perceived as before they got there, to what they are today.
Right.
I mean, the New England Patriots in the 80s and early 90s were a joke. I mean, when Bill Parcells got the New England Patriots, they kind of got them a little bit relevant. You know, they were the laughing. I remember the 85.
You almost couldn't give away tickets to Schaefer Stadium.
Couldn't. I can remember my first year living up here in 2001. I was the athletic director of the Boys and Girls Club, and the Patriots would send tickets to us, and people would nobody wanted them. I mean, I would take groups of kids to Patriot games. I would drive down to Foxborough in a van full of kids, and there'd be nobody in the stands. I mean, they were a terrible football team. And now look at who the New England Patriots are. They are the standard bearers. And when you see Bill Belichick, who I believe is the greatest coach ever to live, but, you know, walking with Tom Brady, that Tom Brady is the guy that kind of turned the corner there and made them who they are. I think Tom Brady's a big reason for that. I think when he's not under center, that's got to be a, for me, I guess that's my Derek Jeter. When Jeter retired, for me, that was a kind of a difficult process to see him not on the team anymore. He's not the captain anymore. He's gone. It's got to be tough for a Patriots.
As much as anything, that not having Jeter presented a large hole in your life. You watched number two play shortstop in the Bronx for, at that point, it was probably, what, close to half your life?
Yeah.
I've watched Tom Brady play football for teams I root for since I was 12. I'm 33 now. So when that day comes, I'm going to be, you know, it's going to be weird.
Yeah.
But when I think about the Patriots as a whole, the year Tom Brady got hurt, Matt Cassel still produced enough that he was able to land somewhere else for good money.
Right.
When the heir apparent coach for the Patriots, Josh McDaniels, left the nest to go to the Broncos, and granted this was going on, was it 9-10 years ago, he came back pretty quick. He didn't have maybe everything that the Patriots had put together, but when you look at the track records there, Belichick's teams produce, Daniels' teams didn't to this anywhere right. near the same degree. And, you know, when you have with the system where you can put in a quarterback, if he's at all capable, you know, you can still be competitive.
Aren't you answering a different question, though?
Maybe.
So I think you're saying Belichick's more important to the Patriots' success, but is that the same answer as who's going to hurt you more when they leave? It's always going to be the player that hurts you more, isn't it? The players are the ones you get attached to.
I still think it's Belichick. I think the importance of Belichick...
You will have a more emotional day when Bill Belichick is no longer trotting along the sidelines, who you see for approximately 50 seconds of every single game.
I can see where he's coming from in that perspective.
No one's ever been attached to a coach. They like the coach. They're happy the coach helps them win games, but you're attached to the players, right? That has to be the answer.
But I think in Bill Belichick's case, I think it's a different animal. I think when you talk about, and we talk about this about elite athletes all the time, there's a handful of elite coaches that have poached in this sport. And Bill Belichick's one of them. And I'm going to say, and I don't know what other, I think Lombardi's one of those guys. I think, let's think about some of the great coaches that you could put on that pedestal right now that's with Bill Belichick. Name one. It's hard. John Wooden would be with Bill Belichick.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Going all sports. Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what I'm talking about. We are so quick now to pass the buck on who's the greatest of all time. You know, we talk about some of these, we talk about athletes like that all the time, that they never compared to Babe Ruth or compared to Michael Jordan or compared to Bill Belichick. And I think when you're talking about Bill Belichick in specifically, I can almost see that being more emotional for me. And I'm not a Patriot fan, but seeing him walk away to Tom Brady, you still have a comfort zone that Bill Belichick's there. If Bill Belichick left before Tom Brady, I don't know if Patriot fans have the same comfort zone.
To answer a bit of your question before we get out of the into the break.
Yeah, we do have to take a break, yeah.
I'd say, it's not like I look at Belichick on the sideline and my heart, you know, races.
That's what you make it sound like.
No, as a Patriots fan, my heart races because we win. And that's the thing that Belichick brings. My relationship with the players of the teams I root for as a 33-year-old compared to, like, you know, a 15-year-old is much different. I don't, like, I enjoy watching Tom Brady play football, but when he's gone, I'm not going to be like, oh, I miss Tommy. Like, I just don't, like, I...
When they're going 6-10, you will be saying, I miss Tommy.
They won't be going 6-10. We'll get this when we get back. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about this. I got a bone to pick with Brady. Since he's here, we'll do it. Go to Twitter right now at 101.3 The Game and answer the question for us. Brady or Belichick, who are you going to be sad about when they retire? We'll be right back.
Day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It is Sports Saturday. And man, I love to hear that weather forecast, don't you?
Yeah.
80s and sunny for at least a couple days in a row.
I'm only wearing pants today because the swamp bugs are out at Centennial Field.
Oh, it's going to be rough over there.
I got savaged last night doing post-game interviews after the D2 championship.
But you probably handled it like a champ.
I was balancing on one leg, trying to swat the bugs off the other leg, just going back and forth, right leg, left leg, trying to swat the bugs away while I'm like holding a recorder in front of the star pitcher and then the coach. And it's like, oh, man.
Sports writer problems.
Yeah.
There it is. Big day today for high school sports, though, right? Some championships. We've had some championships already. Let's get into that right now real quick.
Spring ends today, Jeff.
Yeah, crazy. Good. Summer's here. Let's go.
I know. I'm ready for it. Yeah, we got a triple header at Centennial Field for high school baseball. Division III game starts at 1. I'm going to be hustling right over there after we're done here. That's top-seeded White River Valley. That's a team. This is a team that has never lost.
Start a program?
Yes, it's a new school this year. They merged three different schools.
Right, I didn't know
and
that.
And they're undefeated. One of the teams that went into White River Valley was South Royalton, a D4 powerhouse. I think they'd been to the last three or four state championship games in D4. But they're in the D3 final now. They're playing against Virgins. Virgins, it was 2014, had to scrap its varsity team because they didn't have enough kids to play. Mm. And now they're back.
Full circle.
They're here because a kid named Jarrett Muzzy spun a perfect game in the semis down in Chester.
I know Chester very well.
Brady, do you know where Chester is?
No.
Okay. Southeastern Vermont. Okay. It's all good. After that game, we have D1. That's top-seeded CVU. The Red Hawks are, let's do the math, 17-1. They are going against
Mount Mansfield.
Oh, yeah. Cinderella Mount Mansfield. I'm mentally, I'm going through the other side of the bracket. It's like, no, it wasn't South Burlington. It wasn't CVU, or it wasn't Colchester. It wasn't Burr and Burton. It's Mount Mansfield, the 10 seed, the first 10 seed to get there since 1995 when Mount Mansfield did it that time.
And they're red hot. I mean, they're playing great baseball right now. And CVU, let's face it. I mean, look, that's the number one seed. We expect them to win the baseball game. But after last year's disappointment, there's a lot of pressure on the Red Hawks to get it done tonight.
The Red Hawks hadn't gotten out of the quarterfinals in three straight years. Now they're finally back in the title game. It's the fourth one since 2012. But they're trying to do something that doesn't usually happen, which is the number one seed win the Division I championship.
Right.
It hasn't happened since 2007. So in that time it happened, a name folks around here would know, Casey Harmon,
that's right.
The stud pitcher for South Burlington, was the guy doing it for the then Rebels. So that's the 4 o'clock game. Then D4 tonight, we have Black River against Danville, 1-2, and that's at 7 o'clock. In a half hour at Virtue Field, we've got D1 boys lacrosse. That's CVU going for the 7-peat over there.
And what a big win they had over Essex, and what a scintillating game it was against us.
Yeah, it was wild. We were there. We had a freelancer named Andy Bowe covering that for us. Wild swings, tense. I don't think it ever got outside of a two goal margin there. Yeah. But the Red Hawks, as they have for 6.5 years running now, continue to find a way. Dave Trevithick's team is just, you know, out of this world when it comes to boys lacrosse in Vermont. And then lacrosse season finishes up at 2 p.m. South Burlington hosts, it's in their backyard.
Right.
Top-seeded Wolves, they're hosting the Burr and Burton Bulldogs, a 2-seed. They'd met during the regular season. The Wolves won 10-6. But I think that could be a toss-up as much as anything. The Wolves have been tested here. I think it was a pair of one-goal games in the quarters and then the semis to get them here. And then down at Castleton, three softball games are on tap. The headliner there is the middle game, and we're talking Franklin County softball, which is right after Franklin County hockey. Softball is almost the king up there. It's number two Missisquoi and number four BFA St. Albans. BFA, as people may have read or heard, one of the wildest wins you'll ever hear about in the semis in Essex. They were down 7-1. And then in the seventh inning, they were down 14-10, and they won 15-14 in a game that featured 7 home runs, 5 of them by Essex.
Nothing better than a BFA St. Albans Missisquoi matchup in Castleton. Nothing better than that.
Nope. It doesn't.
You couldn't have found a field somewhere
closer.
But
Castleton is
neutral site, and it's a great venue.
If you haven't been out of Castleton, it's a
beautiful.
Fantastic
I'm just
facility.
Saying, do they really need to go 2.5 hours away to play that game?
This is a thing that happens every year when it's two teams from one corner, and they have these sites set up, you know, in advance. And it provides a venue that, you know, everybody can congregate and make a day out of it. I'm sure if it ever happened in New York where you're from, Brady, like when the state basketball tournament was at Glens Falls every year.
I used to go to that every year.
Say two teams from section whatever the heck Buffalo area is, and then a team from Rochester, maybe Anthony Lamb School, are in the finals or the semis, and they have to go schlep all the way across the turnpike to get to Glens Falls. I'm sure they probably had the same thing, but the mystique of going to, you know, that neutral site where it all happens is part of the charm.
But that's different because that's a state tournament, so it's a Final Four, so it's an entire weekend. You can't predict that. They've had some time to plan this, haven't they? When were the semifinals?
The semis were Tuesday.
Okay, so you had
The neutral sites are set well in advance for all the Vermont champions.
Yeah, I mean, Vermont's a small state, number one. We're talking like a 2-hour drive, and Castleton's got one of the best facilities in the state to house it. I mean, where do you want to play a state championship? You want to play a state championship on a less than superb facility? I mean, you want to have these kids play on the best facility possible. So why not go to Castleton? It's probably the second best facility next to UVM that we have for soccer.
UVM doesn't have one.
How far is Linden from those places?
2 hours.
Okay, how far is Castleton from those places?
2 hours.
2 hours.
All right. So that's no good. They could have played it in Norwich.
The way it works, the VPA sets up these neutral sites in advance so that, you know, the least neutral sites are in the fall, but that's just because those sports are turf dependent and it's who can host on the day.
Yeah. But, well, big day today, obviously, and you're covering all the games at Centennial Field.
I've got the first two games at Centennial, and then I'll retreat to the foxhole at the BFP newsroom to churn out the rest of the content.
Yeah. This is a big time of year, busy time of year for you.
And then tomorrow is freedom.
It's just relax. And it's supposed to be 82 degrees tomorrow and Sunday, so you're going to have a perfect day. All right, before we go to breaks, we only have a few minutes, and this segment got a little bit long. But earlier this week, now my profession is Romunto, so I'm at Romunto's this week, and I never get a chance, I very rarely get a chance to listen to The Huddle, which you can listen to Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, right here on this station with Brady Farkas.
I already know where you're going, and you're still wrong, I think.
And I'm scrolling down Twitter one afternoon, and I noticed that they had a conversation about the New York Yankees policy on beards. Now, what they were talking about that time was that Dallas Keuchel, the pitcher for Houston, that was a free agent, obviously, throughout this whole season so far, and after the draft was over and the compensatory pick didn't have to go to the Houston Astros if the Yankees signed him or whoever signed him before the draft was going to be gone. We knew that he was going to go. And one of the big rumors was he was going to go to the Yankees. And we know that the Yankees have a policy on beards. And if you know Dallas Keuchel, he's got one of the most professional beards I've ever seen. Okay, we're talking about a beard that's down to the middle of his chest, one that covers up the logo on the, you know, on the uniform.
It's a lifestyle.
It is. I mean, it's got his own zip code. It probably has its own Twitter account. I mean, it's a serious beard. It's the Kyle Guy man bun of beards, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. So, the argument was that they were talking, is the Yankees beard policy and what their policy is on being clean shaven, short hair and beards, is it stupid and should it be gone, taken away?
Yes.
Austin, and Brady, my boy, thinks yes. What's your say on that?
I'm a beard guy.
Yeah.
I like self-expression.
Yeah.
I've never liked the beard policy.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see you bristling in your chair over there.
Here's the thing. I don't care enough to bristle, but I will say this. There's got to be something said about tradition and something about being big and something being bigger than one person. So, you know, I understand everybody wants to have, you want to express yourself and if a beard helps you express yourself. When the beard policy came in the early 70s, when George Steinbrenner took over the Yankees, we remember none of you guys remember. I don't remember because I wasn't even born yet. But the Yankees at that point had many, many, many years of being, they are the Yankees, but one of the worst organizations in baseball. Their winning percentage was terrible. They didn't come anywhere near winning any divisions, any championships. And when Steinbrenner came in, he wanted to change the culture there and added it to, you know, we're gonna shave our faces, we're gonna have short hair, we're gonna be high and tight, we're gonna run this like a military, we're gonna get the Yankees back to where they want to get to. And I think as the years go on, back in those days, that was probably looked at as, oh, that's really great. And as the years have gone on, we've become more progressive, I guess, and you know, people want to show who they are, and that's fine. But I think there's something to be said about tradition, and there's something to be said about discipline and being something being bigger than oneself. So I don't think it's a terrible thing to still have some tradition with the Yankees, and it is what it is with them. I just don't think I think calling it stupid and being like and kind of passing it over like it's not a big deal, you know, or just like it's just dumb to have, I think is I feel we do that with a lot of things. I feel we do that with a lot of old things we just want to throw away. I listen to people on Facebook, on Twitter bash Dick Vitale and say that Dick Vitale should retire, get him out of here. The day that Dick Vitale leaves college basketball is going to be a sad day. That'd be an end of an era. I kind of compare it to that kind of thing there. I understand the beards don't mean anything, but it shouldn't mean anything if they have to shave it either. It's just a rule. It's tradition. It's the Yankees. It's part of being wearing the pinstripes.
They can do what they want, yeah. I see what you're coming from, where you're coming from, like the sacrificing something for the greater whole to a degree. You want to have Steinbrenner wanted a sense of professionalism and you know manners about the team. I still like characters too.
But you don't think the Yankees have had characters?
Not as many. They've been pretty darn boring outside of Swisher. What Yankee has a great personality in the last 10 years?
David Wells.
I said the last 10 years. Outside of Swisher in the last 10 years, how many Yankees can you sit here and say, oh man, that guy's been really fun? I'll give you Judge now and Didi, I think. And I'll give you Didi, Judge, and Swisher in the last decade. Other than that, it's all stodgy, boring.
But the last decade, they haven't been very good. They've been decent. They've been relevant, but they haven't been very good. I mean, they got a little stale. They got a little old. But I mean, they say they haven't any personality. I mean, they're the New York Yankees. I mean, they're the biggest product in baseball.
Doesn't mean they have personality. It just means they're a big draw.
Come on, Brady.
Your boy David Wells.
Yes.
When we're talking about tradition and doing things the same way I'll rewind a week to the conversation we had.
With Curry. Yeah.
With Jack Curry.
Yeah.
They broke tradition to accommodate David Wells. Let the guy have a goatee. Let Dallas Keuchel keep his beard.
Let me ask you. Jeff, let me ask you this. Sure. I got 4 points here that I want to poke holes in your argument.
Okay, go ahead.
Look, I'm the biggest traditionalist there is. Okay, yeah. Play the game like it was in 1920. Like that, I'm all for that in a lot of cases. However, that tradition, that's what's causing baseball to die. That is what everyone says, okay? So if having a little personality, and I've come a long way on bat flipping all this stuff, if expression and character in the game helps it grow, then I'm all for that, and you should be all for that too. So how are you going to feel when the day comes when a free agent chooses not to sign in New York because of this beard policy and you've missed out on a top-flight free agent that you're used to getting?
So show me the time that somebody doesn't want to play
for
them.
I'm just saying, wait until you get that.
First of all, I disagree with you that I think baseball is – I think the problem that baseball isn't because there's not enough personality. I think the problem that you have in baseball is that we have a revenue sharing program now that bad teams are getting paid for being bad teams. So if you're really good, you're paying into a revenue sharing program in terms of you're putting money into bad teams and different owners want to run businesses different ways. I mean, if you're winning in baseball, fans are going to come. So I look at the baseball situations. It's about leadership more than anything else.
Yes, but that's baseball. That's an individual team level. We're talking about a sport as a whole level.
I'm talking about a sport as a whole. I think
there's a reason why, Jeff, the NFL put touchdown celebrations back in after taking them out because they were trying to get personality.
Your difference between bat flips and it getting excited in the end zone is two different animals here. We're talking about baseball. To me, I think the problem you have in baseball is there's too many organizations that aren't worried about winning or they're trying to build it differently. They're trying to build it the way the Red Sox have built their winning, the way the Houston Astros won, the way Kansas City won a few years ago, how they built their organization. So when you're really bad, people aren't going to go. When you're really good, they're going to go. Anywhere you go. And if your team is good, for the exception of Tampa, because their stadium is terrible and it's in a terrible part of the state, if you have a successful team, they're going to go. But when you're talking about the Yankees and the tradition of what they have, until you're going to show me that somebody having to shave their beard is going to cause a big-time free agent not to want to come to New York to play for that organization, or if Boston had the same policy, these organizations people want to be a part of.
The other thing is, it'd be one thing, and Austin, I'll let you jump in on this.
Well, we do have to take a break, though, because we have Andy coming on now. Andy Vasquez comes on next.
Then real quick, it'd be one thing if this was a policy and every player was up to choose whether they wanted to go and be a part of it. At that point, I'd be like, well, hey, you know the rules, you signed up for it. But a lot of these players in the organization are drafted into it. They have no choice in this matter. So they don't have a choice in how they have to acquiesce to this policy, even if they don't want to. So the free agents get a choice and the drafted players don't. That's not right.
I don't get. I guess I don't understand where you're going with that. Okay. So you get drafted by the Yankees, and you have to shave your beard because you're a Yankee. You don't think that's okay,
Jeff? If you said to me, Brady, you can't come work at Ramonto's. We have these rules at Ramonto's. Do you want in? If I say yes, well, hey, I knew the rules. I knew what I was signing up for. But Austin got drafted by Ramonto's. He has zero choice in it. He's got to do it no matter what.
We're going to take a quick break, but if you're going to get ready to play professional baseball and you're going to join an organization that's, hey man, we don't have beards, you're going to shave your beard. You just shave your beard. I mean, it is what it is. It's a rule. And it's nothing that's going to change your life. It's about a little bit of discipline. It's a little bit of tradition.
It's just a stupid rule. That's all.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's stupid. I think it's tradition. Why do you call tradition stupid, Brady?
I love tradition. Trust me.
You don't love tradition. If you love tradition, you understand where this comes from. We get to a point now where it's shaving. You have to shave your beard. If you have to shave your beard to be a New York Yankee, you shave your beard. It's just about tradition. It has nothing to do with being stupid. It's about what they are. And over the years, it's become a bigger thing with the Yankees because it's the Yankees. It's part of being a Yankee, being in the Yankee culture, wearing the pinstripes. It's simple as that, but it's not stupid. It's tradition.
Baseball needs to modernize. The Yankees need to modernize.
Oh, yeah, they got to modernize, right? The Yankees, one of the greatest, they're worth billions of dollars, needs to modernize. The greatest sports franchise in all of professional sports has to modernize.
That's all right. Like Rich looks at things through black and gold glass or black and yellow glasses in the Bruins, Jeff just sees everything through pinstripe colored lenses. That's okay. Okay. It's just, okay. There's no change in that mind.
I'm used to it.
Well, okay. Yeah. You both can spin this any way you want, but to sit here and tell me that the New York Yankees aren't modernized, they're not a franchise that's way behind the times, is crazy talk.
I've sat on this for the entire segment until now as a guy who's been burned by beard policy that is unwritten. It's stupid.
Well, we got to take a break. We got to take a break because we have a guest coming on soon. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
There's a lot happening in New York, man, and I'm not talking about the Yankees. I'm not talking about the Rangers. I'm not talking about the Mets, and I'm definitely not talking about the New York Football Giants. But the New York Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets, there's a lot of excitement going on with them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, new head coach.
They're 0-0.
I mean, listen, Le'Veon Bell just got a new GM. I mean, there's some excitement there. Yeah. Got the quarterback. And who better to talk to than our good friend from the record, NorthJersey.com, Jets insider Andy Vasquez. Good morning, Andy. Thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I had all these things to ask you, and then last night when I got home, I was looking at a news line, and it looks like you guys got your GM last night.
Yeah, after 24 days, the Jets finally hired a GM, which most importantly means I don't have to carry my laptop with me everywhere I go anymore. But, yeah, Joe Douglas, he was obviously the favorite from the beginning, the vice president of player personnel with the Eagles. He was linked to the job even before the Jets fired McCagnan back during the draft when there were rumors that there was, you know, dysfunction between Gase and McCagnan. He was linked to the job, and he was basically the first name that kind of came out, and finally the Jets got the job done. He's got a great personnel background, was a scout with the Ravens for 15 years, and has helped build a Super Bowl winner in Philly, a place that had never won a Super Bowl before. And the Jets are going now on 51 years since their last Super Bowl, so I think it's good to have a guy with that kind of background who's been around, obviously learned how to do it in several respected organizations, and going to try to bring something to the Jets they haven't had in a long time, which is a functional front office.
Andy, I got to ask, Adam Gase, I mean, I think there were a lot of eyes that were kind of like, wow, Adam Gase when they signed him, but they've given him, I mean, this is the guy Adam Gase wanted. This is really Adam Gase's team right now. Are you surprised that he's the guy the Jets picked?
Well, I thought, given all the options, I thought he was a good hire because the most important thing for the Jets right now is to get the most out of Sam Darnold. And Gase has a history of working with quarterbacks. He has a history of being an offensive mind. Obviously, his offense was not very good in Miami, and that's one of the main reasons that he got fired. But I think if you look at the quarterbacks he was dealing with, especially Ryan Tannehill, I mean, this should be a different level for him. He should have a guy in Sam Darnold that he can mold, a guy who obviously has more skill and versatility than Tannehill. And I think, you know, he should be judged on what he does going forward. It's a little surprising that so quickly, you know, 5 months ago he got hired, that he's been able to shape the organization kind of in his vision already. I mean, obviously Mike McCagnan was the guy who helped hire him, was comfortable bringing him in, and for lack of a better term, he pushed out McCagnan. So that part of it is surprising, and that part of it is kind of the typical, what are the Jets doing? But I think there's a chance that they come out of it. They've got a solid executive now. They've got Gase who, you know, there aren't going to be any excuses for him to not succeed here. So I think overall it can be a good thing going forward.
Andy, you alluded to it a little bit before, and it's a slight detour from talking about the coach and the sort of reboot of the Jets. But you this vacant GM post, you're saying held you hostage for 3.5 weeks. I know how that goes when you got to be ready for news to break at certain times.
But Andy, you guys are like brothers for the record.
Yeah, we're Gannett brothers here. I'm at the Burlington Free Press up here, so I know how that goes. But not quite to the same degree of like taking my laptop with me everywhere I go, every waking hour. But When you got this potential story, this news that could break looming over you, what's that look like in your day-to-day life?
I mean, I'm not kidding. You bring your laptop with you everywhere you go. Like, I went to a concert in Brooklyn on Wednesday night, and my laptop was with me because you need to be able to react if something happens. And it's not complaining. It's just the reality of the situation. You know, the other funny thing is I cover golf, so I'm at the PGA Championship on a Wednesday thinking, you know, this is the night I can go home early because I was driving from Jersey to Long Island. It's a long drive. You're getting up at like 5:45 in the morning.
Oof.
So around 11:30 on a Wednesday, I'm like, okay, if I finish this story on Speech, I can go home, get some rest, you know, feel good about coming here tomorrow early. And then you see Mike Maccagna gets fired, and you're there till 8:30 at night writing like five stories. So it's never predictable with the Jets. It's just kind of how it is. Whenever you think, you know, you can relax, something happens, and that's okay. It's part of covering the job. It's part of what makes it exciting. And, you know, it was nice last night to see that it was over, and, you know, I had a story ready to go and wrote a couple more. And it's, you know, it's good to start getting focused more on what is this team going to look like next year rather than, you know, all the kind of backstage drama. And the backstage drama is nice to get you through, you know, the dog days of the offseason, but... You know, it would be nice and more interesting to cover a football team that, you know, can put some strong games together, which I haven't done yet since I've covered the Jets.
We are talking to New York Jets insider Andy Vasquez here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Andy, listen, there's a lot of excitement, though. I know a lot of Jet fans here, and they're excited about this team. You got some personality with Bell. We know the quarterback is in good position. The defense was solid last year. I think people can feel good about it this year. I mean, can we really think, is this a team that we can expect to potentially make a run for a playoff spot?
I would say be cautiously optimistic because there are a lot of reasons why the Jets should be better this year. I mean, first of all, Darnold's going into year two. He has more weapons. He has Bell, which is a guy who should make everything easier on everyone, especially Darnold, just kind of as a decoy, as a relief valve, as a versatile weapon. You know, one of the most versatile weapons in the league if he's the same guy that he was 2 years ago, and there's no reason to believe he won't be. He may be a little rusty at first, but he looks like, you know, the same explosive athlete that he's always been. I think, though, that where you start to be cautious is the Jets' offensive line isn't great. They have a guy, Jonathan Harrison, at center, who was the backup last year, and the Jets were hesitant to put him in. Now they're riding with him as their starter, which, you know, it's risky going, you know, putting a backup in front of your prized quarterback and trying to turn him into something he hasn't been in his whole career. So that's an area to watch. At cornerback, the Jets, while they've made a lot of upgrades on defense and their pass rush should be, you know, kind of what they've wanted for the last few years, they have some serious depth issues at cornerback. Trumaine Johnson is coming off the worst year of his career, and if he's not significantly better this year, they're not going to have, like, a legitimate number one cornerback because they got rid of, they didn't bring back Morris Claiborne, who was probably their best cornerback the last 2 years. They're putting another backup, Daryl Roberts, in a starting role. And they lost Buster Screen and replaced him with Brian Poole, who's a solid slot corner, but not a game changer. So no matter how good your pass rush is, no matter how stout you are up front, you know, it doesn't really matter if guys are open. And we saw how good Jamal Adams was last year, but it didn't really matter because when mistakes are being made in front of him, it's hard to win football games. And while the Jets defense was good in a lot of ways last year, they struggled late in tough situations because they struggled in coverage. And I think you could see a lot of those issues this year. So I think there's a chance they can be better, but things are going to have to click their way. And some of these gambles they're making, like putting Roberts starting at corner and putting Harrison starting at center, are going to have to pay off. So there's just not a lot of room for error. That's why I say cautious optimism.
We only have a minute left. I got to ask you two questions. You tell me who you sure think. Best running back this year at MetLife Stadium is going to be Le'Veon Bell or Saquon Barkley?
Ooh, that's tough. I think it's going to be Bell. I think he's motivated. He's got a lot to prove, and I think he's going to have a big year.
And yay or nay on the new uniforms?
Can I go with meh? They're fine. There was nothing wrong with the old uniforms. The old uniforms are fine. These are good, I guess.
They are a mix of the 85 Jets and the Cleveland Browns, though, to me. The Cleveland Browns uniforms of right now. What they got to go back to is like...
They've got
to go back to like the, you know, the Al Toon Jets uniforms. Those were great uniforms back in the day. You know, the Jet logo with the airplane in the line on top of the J. Those were some good uniforms.
I like those. I will say this. The helmet looks better in person than it does on TV or in photos. The helmet looks cool. I'll say that.
Andy Vasquez, you're the best, buddy. We'll touch base with you down the road, my man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate
All right, have a great day. Hey, listen, if you're a Jets fan, you got to be excited. I'm not a Jets fan, but I'm excited to see what they can do. And obviously in the AFC East, a division that's been just run by the Patriots, you got some more personnel and you got some real talent to be able to combat the Patriots offense.
Yeah, you get arguably the best running back in football. He's going to be fresh as a daisy.
He is, and he's driven, and he's hungry.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see. All right, take a quick break when we come back. It's Out in Left Field time.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on 101.3 The Game.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning, it's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. This segment every week is our Out in Left Field segment. Usually our boy Aaron, who's home a little ill today. So Aaron Wells, we hope you're feeling better. Brady Farkas in the chair for him. Brady, what's our Out in Left Field today, pal?
Yeah, I like the one that you found earlier that we did it a little bit earlier in the week, but it bears repeating about the guy up in St. Albans, or about the people up in St. Albans. Did you see this one?
Oh, this is the local story. Yeah, this is a good one. Go ahead.
Up in St. Albans. Well, a house was broken into, but nothing was taken, Austin. So the house gets broken into, and everything is neat and orderly. Like, the people leave, and the kid's room is a mess.
Yeah.
They come back, kid's room is spotless. Everything in the house is spotless. The house has been broken into. It's been completely cleaned. Nothing's been stolen. Why? Because the cleaning service went to the wrong house. So the door was left unlocked. So the people just walk right in, clean up the entire house, and then realize they've been at the wrong place all along.
So I suppose that's better than like an actual case of like breaking and entering with some like cleanliness fetishist or whatever. Well, that like
I would be psyched. Can you imagine walking in your house end of the day and your house is completely clean? My first thought would be my mother must have come up and done something. You know, I tell you right now, it wouldn't be my wife. I know my wife wouldn't be cleaning anything in the house.
Have you ever seen The Big Bang Theory?
No, not enough.
Not enough to know. Episode 2 of the first season, Sheldon breaks into Penny's apartment and cleans it.
Okay.
So that is, by the way, that was a good one, just over the one where Idaho's favorite beer is Mike's Hard Lemonade. The favorite beer
of
men.
Is that true?
That's just sad.
The favorite beer of men in Idaho is Mike's Hard Lemonade.
That's so sad.
First of all, Mike's Hard Lemonade is not beer.
Correct.
It's lemonade, which is, you know, delicious, but it's not beer.
The country's top three beers in this poll is Budweiser, Coors Light, and Corona. Idaho, Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Wait a minute. The top three beers in this country?
According to this poll, which, you know, whatever this is, askmen.com. So
that is in Vermont, the people I know, is like sacrilege that those three beers would be in any kind of list.
Budweiser, yeah. Coors, Corona, Idaho. 23% of Idahoans think that Mike's Hard Lemonade is
Idaho.
The best.
That's a bad look for Idaho. That's a bad look.
Listen, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? All right, sports update time, Brady. Let's do it.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. The big man, Austin Danforth. The ragged Austin Danforth. Sitting in his chair, but he's here today, man. You're playing hurt. I love it.
I'm not. It's not even hurt so much as just weary.
No, you're tired.
Just
you're
weary.
Working hard. You're getting it done. That's what it's about, kids. This is the kind of guy you should be looking up to, Austin Danforth. He's
not
staying in bed.
That.
He's been working his butt off all night, overtime, trying to get it done for the community of Burlington and Chittenden County. Read the Burlington Free Press. Know what's going on with the playoffs.
Hopefully,
and he's here today doing
hopefully
this.
We're typo-free. We're, you know, fingers crossed.
Now, listen, you know, you get a little
blame
break
the
on
editor.
That. Exactly. Brady Farkas filling in for Aaron Wells, who's out today. But before we go on, because there's a lot to talk about here, I want to talk about Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. They've been in business since 1985. They're located at 16 Krupp Drive, Willison, 802-863-2326. You can go to their website at www.vermontengine.com or go to them on Facebook. Same thing, Vermont Engine at Facebook. Their hours of operation are 7:30 to 5, Monday through Friday, and Saturdays they're open 8 to noon, 8 a.m. to noon. They're open right now. They're an engine machine shop. They do engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, and their flywheel resurfacing. They sell mowers. They sell Dixie choppers and grass hopper zero-turn mowers. I'm going to tell you, I got to get myself a zero-turn mower. I mean, there are. Have you ever been on one of those things?
No, but no. I've seen them. I've seen them work their magic.
I mean, you get the lawn done in like 10 minutes. It's unbelievable. They sell those things over there. They've got great deals right now on holdover Dixie choppers. And I've always said, every time we talk about these guys, people will tell you you're not going to want to buy a lawnmower in the spring or summer because everybody wants a lawnmower in spring and summer. Guys, listen, you need a new lawnmower. Where you go is you check them out at Vermont Engine Company, and we're so proud to have them a part of our Sports Saturday family. So thank you guys for being a part of it. Check them out today. They're open till noon today. Listen, we got a text line here. Ram fan Ralph just texted, Miami coach is nuts for canceling his OTAs to get another ring with the Patriots. What's your take? Stories is Coach Flores, new coach of the Miami Dolphins, yep. Former defensive coordinator for the New England Patriots, the world champion New England Patriots, by the way. Story is he canceled his practice the other day to go up where they get, I'm assuming, the ring ceremony for the Patriots championship.
Yeah, it was on Thursday night.
Happens just about every year.
Yeah,
Catalina Wine Mixer happens every year.
Exactly. He cancels his OTA practice and flies up to get his ring with the Patriots. Austin, what's your take on that?
So we were just talking off air.
Yeah. It's funny that we're talking about that because that's the text came
Our ears are tingling here. Yeah. Flores had been with the Patriots for 15 years.
Since 2003.
And he's not an old guy.
No.
Like, so it was basically like his entire...
His first job was like at 23.
His professional home until he left was the New England Patriots.
Correct.
From what I've read about him, tough background, came from a tough place in...
Great story.
Like New York City area.
New York City, yeah. Great story. I'm looking at this like, okay, the guy worked his butt off to help lead them to be a part of their championship run. It's a way of him being able to show appreciation for the people that gave him his start and got him to where he is. It's one day canceled of work. What would have been the difference if he was projectile vomiting when he woke up and just couldn't show up?
Assistant coaches can't do the job for him.
Then we're nitpicking how he wanted to approach the day.
I
don't have a problem with him going to New England, and that's not just because I'm a New England guy.
I think it's a bad look. I really do. You're talking about a guy that's taking over for an organization that's hungry to win. He's been brought in there to do that exactly. He is in the same division as the Patriots, and he's canceling an OTA to go get a ring with them. I understand. I don't think it's a huge ordeal when you look at it from the periphery, but I think when you look at it like internal team-wise, why would you do that? That is so un-Belichick to me, number one, not to do that, number one. And number two, it's a bad look. You're brand new to your team. You're a rookie coach. The message should be that ring was last year. That's my old life. I'm here to bring what's gone on with the Patriots. I want to take that here to Miami. We're going to work. I'm not going to get my ring today. To me, it's just a bad message to a team that needs something to get themselves going.
It's only a bad look or a bad message if he didn't take the time in the room to make a point out of whatever, but the day before, to make a point out of whatever the reasons were he was going.
Well, what are the reasons?
If it's about a loyalty thing and he spins it in the room to the coaches and the players as, this is the type of thing I want to build here when we start winning.
But we'll start doing it next tomorrow when I get back from getting my ring from the team.
No,
the other day.
You can make a, it doesn't have to be a selfish, thing right. That he's just parachuting at hitting the ejector seat out on the Dolphins for a day. He can do it. You're a coach. You know how to spin stuff for a team.
If Brian Flores loved the Dolphins or loved the Patriots that much, he should have just stayed with the Patriots.
655-6672 is the number to call. You want to get out on this. Go ahead, Brady. Finish
your point. I was going to say, Austin, too, Brian Flores willingly left the Patriots. He left the Patriots willingly to go to the Dolphins.
Career move.
That's like you breaking up with your girlfriend and then 2 months later going to hang out at her wedding when she gets remarried. You just don't do that. Come on now.
But in that scenario, we still don't know the circumstances of the breakup and what happened after.
Let me say this. If this happened, say, in next April, okay, so he had a whole season with his team and it was kind of it happened later on.
Yeah.
If this was like a non-mandatory OTA or whatever, he just decided it was the end of it a year after he's been with the Miami Dolphins, fine. But the fact that this is his first one, an organization that's just been an embarrassment, and a very proud organization that's been an embarrassment for a long time. He's being brought in there to change the whole culture of the Miami Dolphins.
And you have a new quarterback who you just traded for.
Exactly. You have all these things there. to do it now, it doesn't mean a whole lot. And he may have explained to the guys, like, hey, about the loyalty piece you're talking about, and I'm going to go, you know, this was the end. This is like my ending there to be able to bring this to you. I get all that stuff. But the look to me is just, there's got to be some people down in Miami that kind of eyebrows went up a little bit when they thought, well, he's canceling a practice to go up to get a ring. I mean, come on. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, even as a coach, if I was to leave where I coach at Colchester and, you know, and I went to another school and I decided to cancel a practice because I was going back there to do something else, and it's a much lower level here. We're talking about high school girls soccer compared to the NFL. I know it's two different animals here, but I think that would be kind of a weird look for the players that I would have at a new school that happened. You know what I mean? I think for where he is today and how soon it's been since he's taken over, and these OTAs are, you only get a handful of mandatory OTAs throughout the season. We know what they do. And let's talk about, you know, you talk about the NFL preseason. They can't do anything there anyway now. I mean, the coaches are so hamstrung to get their players ready for the NFL season because of the new collective bargaining agreement. You can't do a whole lot at these preseason stuff. All these moments he's got with his players are important. You cancel a whole practice?
Is this coming down to the same sort of scenario where if it's, you know, you're having a kid, and we're talking, like, so if this was the first time he'd won a Super Bowl ring rather than the fifth, we'd be talking about it differently. The same as if it's your first kid or your fifth kid and you can't, like, if it's your first kid.
Are you
kid,
comparing a kid to a Super Bowl ring?
Essentially, like, why else? Like, we're talking reasons why you would, you know, do
Super
something
Bowl,
that would look bad or harm your team. Looks, you know, perception aside, what isn't helping your team is not being there. But
in the NFL, we know that coaches are hired and fired based on your culture and whether you're winning or not. And it's and teams don't wait anymore. You know, teams don't give you the benefit of the doubt to just stay with you for a bunch of years, you know, and let you kind of go through your growing pains. This, to me, and I think he's going to be a great coach down there, and he is a great coach. To me, just from the periphery and in the world that we live in now, Austin, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, no big deal. But in today's social media world and today with 24-hour everything, to me, this is just a bad look for a really good coach and a really disciplined coach. And I just, if I was playing for the Dolphins and my coach canceled an OTA because he's going to another organization's, you know, ring ceremony where he's got a bunch of them also, I would almost be able to defend this if it was his first ring and he'd never gotten one before. I mean, what's he got? 35 rings? I mean, he's got a lot of rings. You know what I mean? That he's got to leave his team. I just think it's a weird look. Just a weird look.
Do you feel differently about former players skipping their OTAs to go back? Like Trey Flowers was there, who just signed that massive deal with the Lions. Eric Rowe was there, who's no longer with the Patriots. Do you feel differently about former players skipping out on their new team activities to go back?
I feel a little bit more lenient towards the player because it's a player over the coach. The coach is the figurehead. The coach is the leader. The coach is the one that sets the tone.
I think he may have set the tone in a way that it's not detrimental to the team. But I think on the whole, players, coaches, whomever, it's a day they've earned.
It's true.
They put in the hours, the sweat equity. It's a day they've earned. And, you know, if they can't get a day to celebrate, then Jesus, that's cold.
The Patriots, Brady, we had talked to this. I did tease this, and Brady made, of course, you know, the boss here. He's got to make sure he points out everything I do wrong. And as we were getting out of the first break, he had said,
that's how you get better.
That's a good point. Thank you very much. I'm not used to that.
It's called paying off your
team. How many times have you had to reprimand someone for burning a pizza?
Well, like five times a day, but okay, you know, what are we going to do?
But that's right, how you get enough. Better.
That's how I get better. Thank you, Austin. Thank you very much. But Brady did mention that he felt the Patriots are going to be 6-10 going into this season.
No, not this season. When Brady leaves.
Oh, when Brady leaves, it'll be 6-10. Oh, come on. You don't know that. I mean, we don't know what the personnel's gonna be like. And the Patriots are kind of set up, right? Through the draft. I mean, they're in pretty good shape when he does decide to leave. It's going to be interesting. I don't think they're ever going to be, unless something really crazy, I don't think Bill Belichick's ever going to be 6-10 in the NFL. Not in the NFL. Not with his. He is a football savant. Yeah. I mean, there's, and again, we talked about this earlier in terms of,
he's an experienced savant too. That's the thing.
But there's nobody like him, and there really never has been. There's not another coach in any sport right now like Bill Belichick. There just isn't. There just isn't. He's like one of maybe, and we'd have to brainstorm, like maybe one of three or four. I put him with John Wooden. I think Belichick and Wooden are the two greatest coaches ever to live. Seriously. I mean, name me someone that's better than both of those guys.
Oh, boy.
And that's what I mean. There's just nobody near him in the NFL. Nobody.
The thing about this, Jeff, you say that they're set up well. do we know that they really are? Look at what happened to your New York Giants. What was their biggest problem forever? They didn't draft well. They didn't develop well. It was Landon Collins, was Odell Beckham, and a bunch of
greed
and a bunch of nobodies, which is why they had to go out and overspend in free agency, which is why the whole thing crashed down upon them. Look at what the Patriots draft history is. Even last year, I mean, Sony Michel is the only player they drafted that saw any significant amount of field time. There were some injuries there. Yeah. Isaiah Wynn was injured. Duke Dawson was injured. So we don't know about those guys, but they haven't drafted. I mean, there's one person on the team from their entire 2017 draft class. So they.
But your argument, and I get your argument.
They have the most players in the league over 30 years old. But the most players in the league over 30. They need younger talent.
But he knows who to bring in. I mean, it doesn't matter who he drafts. It doesn't matter what he does. The personnel he puts on the field each year is going to compete. And until Bill Belichick leaves and somebody else starts making those decisions, the Patriots are not going 6-10.
When Tom Brady's gone, it's going to be significantly harder for them to pull a rabbit out of a hat.
They did it with Matt Castle.
They're not
doing it with Matt Castle.
But I think what Brady's saying, rabbit out of the hat, like those drives that, you know, Tom Brady makes that make him Tom Brady are the type of plays, the clutchness that he has that other quarterbacks just don't, by and large. You can't replicate that at the drop of a hat.
I will tell you this, until the Patriots without Tom Brady, and if Bill Belichick's still leading the show here, until it shows me, and I could be wrong. We're just talking about potential. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. Until I see Bill Belichick not being able to put the right players on the field, I am never going to think that they're not going to be competitive. I'm just not going to think that.
Give me a competitive 6-10.
There's a competitive 6-10 if you're a high school athlete. There's no competitive 6-10 if you're a football, if you're an NFL fan. There just isn't. Either you're going to the playoffs or you're not. So you can be competitive and not go to the playoffs. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about being successful. And to me, Bill Belichick will always make them successful. I mean, every year we go into the season saying, how is this team going to win? I mean, they're terrible. Look, what are they doing?
And where are the stars?
He just keeps getting it done. And that's what makes him the greatest of all time, in my opinion, in any sport, in what he's done. In a sport that is so average in terms of teams, right?
I mean, it's built for parity.
Exactly. This team is always above and beyond everybody else. Always.
Preach.
And they are. And here I am, a Giants fan, saying that. And the Giants problem, you're totally right, Brady. I mean, the Giants problem is they've been poorly coached, poorly managed, terrible. That's why I love what Dave Gettleman's doing with the Giants.
What do you think, by the way, on the Patriots? What do you think of the story that came out earlier this week? Adam Humphrey, slot receiver, who was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. He signed with the Titans for a four-year deal. The Patriots had an offer to him late. He said he turned it down in part because he said, I don't know how much longer Tom Brady's going to be here. Why would I want to commit for 4 years when I don't know that Brady's going to be here? So were we at the point where Brady's age is finally working against the Patriots because free agents are now looking at it and saying, I don't know that is a long-term situation for success.
I think you've spelled it out that it is working against them right now.
That's foolish. To me, that's just a decision by a kid or a guy that doesn't want to be there. And I think it's a cop-out to use the Brady explanation. I think that the Belichick way and the Patriot way is very difficult on players, and I think you have to come in, you have to be selfless. And if that's, I don't know him. Let me just say this, though. We were talking about Tennessee. And what a great town that is, Nashville, that city. I love that city. I'm all in on that city.
No free ads here, Jeff.
I'm all in on that city. Yeah, but
by the way, after last week's first 12 minutes of the show, I would have thought you were working for the Nashville Chamber of Commerce.
I'm telling you. Go down there and spend a couple days and tell me you wouldn't be doing the same thing. But the Patriots are always going to be successful if Belichick's still there. If Belichick is there running the show, I think he's the best. And I think the Humphreys decision is on him. I think Belichick shrugged his shoulders and said, okay, whatever. Go play somewhere else. I don't think it matters. I've gotten to a point out 4 years ago when we started doing the show, I would have agreed with all of you. Yeah, that's over. It's over. Until I see it, it's not over.
I didn't say it's over.
I'm saying that until Bill Belichick leaves and he stops, he's not the one pulling the strings and making the decisions. This team will always be successful.
I'm telling you. And I'm saying the thing that holds them all together is the fact that they have Tom Brady. You can overcome all those other shortcomings because they have Brady and because they have Belichick. They will not be there forever.
Brian from Richmond just made a point before we go to break. You use Castle as an example of good and then said in the NFL, you make the playoffs, you're not. Matt Castle, that makes playoffs. Very good point there, but Matt Castle did win 11 games that year. They were 11-5. That just happened to be one of those seasons where 11-5 didn't get you in the playoffs.
That's as much of a fluke as anything in the Patriots.
Exactly. That's very true. That's a very good point as well. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Radio. I just wanted to get to that.
No, go ahead. I'm fine. Now I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. See,
do you fake tan, by the way? I haven't seen you in a little bit. Do you fake tan?
I do not fake tan. I was in Florida for a week. Then I was in Nashville. And if you've followed the weather at all, you've noticed that for the last month, that from like North Carolina down, it's been 90 degrees. So it was like 90 degrees every day I was in Florida. So I got a little bit of a tan. But thanks for noticing, man.
Yeah, well,
are you impressed with it? Or is it looking good? Am I,
You're summer ready.
I'm summer good for me.
You're very into your tan.
What does that mean? I'm into my tan. I don't even know what that means.
Because every time I turn it on, every time I listen to this show, which is every week, you're complaining about our weather and talking about your vacations and all the sun you got. You're very into your tan.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, you're bronze.
When I go away, I like to talk about how nice it was. I mean, I appreciate when I see something good and good.
Do you use sunscreen, or are you like, no, just give me all the rays?
I absolutely use sunscreen, man. You got to wear this. I use all the time. I didn't even realize I was that tan, but thank you for noticing, Billy. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Red Sox with our good friend from The Athletic, Jen McCaffrey. Don't go anywhere.
The Brady and the...
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning, it's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth, and Brady Farkas. Brady's filling in for Aaron. We got on the TikTok of Jewelers guest line right now. We're going to get right to her because she's fitting us in right now, the Athletics Red Sox reporter, Jen McCaffrey. Good morning, Jen. What's happening? Are you there, Jen?
Oh, I can hear you now.
All right.
It's really, really faint, so
wow.
I'm not sure.
All right, well... I know that you got Alex Cora you got to talk with in the next 5 minutes, so we'll just get this. We'll get right to it.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me okay? Are we good now?
I got you now, yeah.
You got me now. All right. Okay. I know you got a busy morning heading, a doubleheader down at Fenway Park today, so it's a big day for you guys. But Red Sox, tough loss last night after a nice sweep against the Kansas City Royals. Mindset-wise with the Sox, where are they at?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is obviously heading into this weekend was a big series and kind of started off, on a bad foot. I really need to try to get at least one, if not two, of these games today. Obviously with the Rays playing the way they are and ahead of them in the division, you can't really let too many of these go. You got Price tonight, but obviously Josh Smith is on the mound today, so it's going to be a piecing that together. But they really have to kind of start picking things up here.
It was the last loss there, the 5-1 loss to the Rays. Did that catch you off guard? Because, I mean, 4 wins in a row, you end this Yankee series with a win, then you sweep the Royals. It seemed like they had a little bit of something going.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought they would be playing a little bit better, just kind of coming off some of those games. You know, at the same time, they were coming off of playing the Royals, who aren't, you know, the strongest competition, I guess, if you will. You were planning to sweep that series, just knowing the competition there. But the Rays are who they are, and they always play you tough, so you can't kind of come into this assuming it's going to be easy. And even though a guy like Yanni Chirinos is on the mound, I kind of can't expect that it's going to be easy, and he shut him out and shut him down for 5 perfect innings before they got to him a little bit there. So, yeah, I mean, surprising a little bit, but at the same time, the way this offense has kind of been inconsistent, that's just, you know, I feel like the name of the game this year.
Jen, is this team constructed to make a big push at this American League East?
You would have thought so, just considering the fact that they, you know, won last year with pretty much the same group. But honestly, I think if they don't make some additions, especially bullpen-wise, over the next month heading into the trade deadline, then, you know, I think they're going to have some major problems, especially knowing that they're so far back in the division. They have a lot of ground to make up. If they can't solidify things in the bullpen and can't get a healthy Evaldi back soon, then I think that's really going to start to, you know, weigh against them.
If they stay like this, let's say they play 500 ball until, you know, the trade deadline in July, do you expect them to sell or to buy?
That's a tough question. You know, I don't ever expect them to kind of, you know, blow things up. I don't think it'd be that route. But with a guy like Rick Porcello heading into free agency, if they're still middling and they know they're not going to make the playoffs, then maybe a guy like him I could see them trying to get something for, because obviously he's probably going to be walking in the offseason. You're not going to get anything for him. So, I mean, I don't think that they'll blow things up and trade away Mookie and JD and everybody else. But I could, you know, if they're still playing the same way they are now and they're not, you know, not making any ground and it it's clear they're not going to make the playoffs, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens.
I know you have like a minute or two left because you got to meet with Cora, but talk about Alex Cora this season, his personality. Is he he just seems very, very, you know, from what I've seen, very level-headed, and he kind of stays the same whether they're winning or losing. Is that the kind of personality they're going to have if they're going to turn this around?
Yeah, I mean, he has stayed level-headed, and he has, for the most part, had the same personality as last year. But you can see how some of this is weighing on him. And, you know, it's only natural as a human being to kind of be frustrated, you know, with bringing back the same group and having the same set of guys and having them not perform. And obviously, you know, there's calls for change here and there, and fans are frustrated and whatnot. So it does take a toll. But I think by and large, you know, this is mostly on the players and even on Dombrowski for not, you know, bringing in some bullpen help this winter. So I think for the most part, Cora's handled this well. And, you know, there are things that he could have done better on the field, or maybe, you know, maybe not sticking with Benintendi in the leadoff spots for so long, or some bullpen management here and there. Overall, I think, you know, I wouldn't peg this start on him. I'd peg it more on some of these guys, especially at the plate and in the rotation as well.
Jen McCaffrey from The Athletic, thanks for fitting us in. Enjoy the rest of your day in the doubleheader.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We had to cut that a little short because she's getting ready to meet with Alex Cora, but we'll talk about the Red Sox right now. 655-6672 if you want to join our conversation, or text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Austin, I mean, you're a Sox fan. We pay attention to baseball on the show. You know that.
Yeah.
I mean, weird place for the Red Sox today. Every time you feel like they're about to explode, they come back to earth. And then they look like they're terrible, and then they look like they're coming back again. So it's a weird team this
year. It's not even two steps forward, one step back, because they're all of three games over 500.
Right.
But it is weird. Like, you think they're not, they're certainly not explosive this year, but last year they led the league in runs.
Yeah.
I mean, the offense was there. It's just not now. And is it one of those where, you know, something snaps and the switch flips for these guys and they can sort of rekindle the type of play that they had last year? I don't know. It is completely confounding.
Well, I mean, also last year, keep in mind, I mean, when you looked at Betts and you looked at Martinez, I mean, you know, they had two best years of anybody. I mean, you talk about first and second in the MVP balloting. How many teams have that? You know, Bogarts had a big year last year. Benintendi had a big year last year. We saw what Chris Sale did most of the season. Rick Porcello. You know, David Price turned it around late. They had that rotation was filthy. I mean, the real problem the Red Sox had was the bullpen, which got really good in the playoffs, which, mm-hmm. with Kelly, you know, obviously leading the way there. But that was probably the bugaboo for a team that won all those games last season. And Dombrowski did nothing in the offseason to improve it. I mean, they got worse in the offseason. And that's what's crazy to me, to think that Dombrowski, who's, you've got the highest payroll as it is. I mean, you're not going to fortify that bullpen with the names that were out there this year. Britton was out there. Ottavino was out there. Kimbrell was out there. And Red Sox fans will say to you, oh, the Kimbrell was terrible. I promise you, Boston fans, you'd feel a lot more comfortable if Craig Kimbrell was closing games for you than what you have going on right now.
Yeah, I think you have Kimbrell. You're probably, let's eat conservatively, three games closer to the top of the American League East standings. Yeah. I mean, that's just, he's that much better than what they've had on the mound.
And isn't that what baseball is now? I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, teams are built around bullpens. I mean, that seems to be what it is nowadays. Obviously, you know, you got hit, but I don't know if you can blame it on the hitting. I mean, I think they're having normal seasons for these guys. I don't think Mookie Betts is Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, he's a very, very good player.
He had a good Ken Griffey Jr. impression last year.
Last year, that's what I'm saying. But Ken Griffey Jr. was Ken Griffey Jr. every single year. You know, Betts kind of had a down year before last year. He had a big year this year. He'll probably have a big year. I mean, he'll have a decent year this year, I'm sure, but he's not going to put the numbers up he did last year. You know, but you got to fortify the bullpen in some capacity. How does Dave Dombrowski not do that?
Yeah, a guy that got so roundly praised for the team that they had on the field last year, just sort of coasted into 2019.
And it kind of reminds me a little bit like of what Dombrowski did with Detroit. I mean, the Detroit Tigers, when he was the GM, they were a really good baseball team. You remember, they were very close to winning a world championship.
Yeah, I was riding elevators with Jim Leland in St. Louis during a World Series. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So great.
Everybody remembers that.
But great teams, obviously great players. But when Dombrowski left, that team was, you know, that team is where they are today. You know, they're starting over. And the Red Sox, to me, you've got some really good young talent. So they're not the Detroit Tigers. They've got some great young talent. But is that young talent, are they going to keep that talent when you've got a bullpen that's literally, I mean, to me, it's a dumpster fire mess.
You know, you've got a Chris Sale who's having a down year, even though I think he's pitched a lot better than his record. You can start seeing that Chris Sale's on the other side of what Chris Sale was, say, when he signed with Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David Price is getting older. Rick Porcello is, you know, Rick Porcello. I mean, talk me off this. I mean,
it's wild to hear David Price is getting older because I think I'm his age. Like, I think we graduated high school
the same
year.
Try to be me, buddy. Try to be me. I'm telling you. I've gotten to the point now where I have employees of mine coming to me and saying, hey, can I ask you a question about presents for my stepdad? What would you like? Or for my father? And I'm like, oh my God.
My favorite is become that. I get guys that I coach saying, hey, can you write me a letter of recommendation for this job? Like, that's my favorite one now.
Oh, see, the kids that I coach, I'm going to their weddings and I got them buying houses in my neighborhood. That's how old I am.
Wow.
You just realize now, like, my God. Like, how did this happen? How did I become this old all of a sudden? How did that happen? A good tan, though, because Brady was telling me that.
You're only as old as you feel.
Good point. Thank you for making me feel better.
Are you on the TB12 diet?
No. God, no, I couldn't do that. I'm close. I
feel like you're...
What does TB12 even eat? What's he eat?
I'm trying to think of, like...
He's never had a strawberry.
He doesn't eat tomatoes, right?
Like,
tomatoes
are out. He stays away from red foods.
Yeah.
So that would be a tough hang in your shop.
In my shop would be really difficult. In my household would be difficult. Can you imagine he doesn't eat... I don't understand why he doesn't eat tomatoes. What's wrong with tomatoes?
Do we eat pizza every day?
It's an inflammatory thing.
I do not.
Like that.
I do not. But I did for a long time. You have to be very careful in my line of work, Brady.
Did you gain a lot of weight doing that?
I did. I gained a lot of weight. I was tipping the scales at like... And, you know, I'm not a huge framed guy here. I was tipping the scales at like two... I don't want to put it out there, but I was tipping them. So about 3 years ago, I decided I'm going to change everything, and I've changed how I eat. But it's very difficult because I love the product. I love pizza.
I had a buddy who worked at Taco Bell in high school. That's all he would eat. He ballooned up, but he did give us some free tacos at some point. So
it was a bonus for you.
It was bonus for me, not so much for him.
But as you get older,
But as you get older, you have to learn that, you know, it used to be like you just eat whatever and it's no problem. Now you have to be really aware of what you eat. You know, last night I did have a couple slices of pizza because I, you know, it was a long day,
long shift. Yeah.
What is the best pizza on the Ramonto's menu?
In my opinion, what's our best pizza? That's a good question. I get that question a lot, Brady. I appreciate you asking me. And that's like a plug for Ramonto's Williston. But I will say it depends on my mood. But I think our Works pizza is absolutely the best slice of pizza I've ever had.
And what's on the Works?
That's a true business, man, because I'm sure the Works is the most expensive, as he tells us all to get it.
Yep, we like that one. But listen, I'm just being bluntly honest with you. But if you really want to know if pizza's good, go to your favorite pizza shop and ask for one slice of cheese pizza.
Yeah.
Because that's how you know.
That's the canvas.
That's how you know, exactly. Because everything else is just, you know, you put stuff on it, you kind of taste those things, you forget about it. You get a slice of cheese pizza, and that'll tell you if it's good pizza.
I like your buffalo chicken.
A lot of people like that, and I do too. That's a very good one. I appreciate that. It's good.
It's got a good blend of, like, crispy, but not so crispy that it's burned.
Right.
But it's sturdy enough that it's not going to flop on you. So it's perfect blend.
I'm trying to get Dave Portnoy, the Prez from...
El Prez,
I want the El Prez to come and do a pizza review at my shop. I've been bugging him to do it.
He uses too much of his free time on Nantucket.
Are you an El Prez fan?
Am I an El Prez fan? I don't know if I'm a fan. I mean, I don't follow it as much, except I really like the pizza reviews. I get a kick out of those. When I come across those on social media, I do like those.
Yes.
El Prez is... You know why I like El Prez? The thing I do like about him is he does not care, and he understands what he's trying to do in his brand, and he's just doing it. Like, he doesn't care what he says. He doesn't care. I mean, in a world that we worry about everything we say, he could care less about what he says.
I can't stand him.
Yeah, what a surprise.
What does that mean? What a surprise.
As a bit of a grammarian and someone who takes pride in pronouncing things well.
That is way over my head, that word.
His complete butchering of, like, pronunciations and spellings, it kills me inside.
I've only really seen the pizza reviews he does, but those are very good. And he takes those seriously.
He's not messing around.
When he's in a city that I'm going to be in, I write down the pizzerias. I want to check them out myself.
I've gone to a couple. One of them is in Penn Station. I think it's called Rosa's.
Okay.
It's like sort of in the LIRR part of the Penn Station. So it's sort of out of the way. But like this was 3-4 years ago. He gave it like an 8.3, which is like nothing to sneeze at score. And it's like this, it looks like it would be a chain place in a train station in the bowels of Madison Square Garden, and it's fantastic pizza.
I bet it is. I'm going to have to write that down next time in the city. Hey, Mark from South here text us, food... common sense, moderation, the fist pump. I am with you, Mark. From South Hero, I am with you. Stop in Ramonto's and have some moderation with me. You know what I mean? All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere. It's Brady's favorite segment, by the way.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
right. We got Brady Farkas filling in for Ann. And last time, Austin, that Brady filled in for Ann, we went to the Hot or Not segment. I had to defend Hot or Not with Brady for the whole segment. So
I love
to do that today.
I love Hot or Not. I just don't understand. I just don't understand what the right answer is. But anyways, I mean, Austin, you know, I won't go through it with you, but Hot or Not, like a hot take means something that's crazy and outlandish. So in my mind, like, if you're saying it's hot, that would be it's false. Whereas in Jeff's mind, it's hot, and therefore it's true.
But whether it's a hot thing, I think the purpose for me, what I tried to explain to you was whether it's hot or not, it's whether it's hot means we like what it says or not.
Well,
it's
I've always thought it was you're either hot on it or not.
I always thought, no, it's a hot take. As in like if I say, hey, the Yankees are the worst team in baseball. Well, okay, that's clearly not true. That's a hot take. So it's...
I feel like it's somewhere between Jeff and my interpretation. Yeah, yeah. Like, you either like it and therefore you are hot on it.
When you were a kid, did you ever play the game? You know, somebody hid something on you and you'd be like, you're getting hotter. You're getting hotter. No, you're getting colder. You're getting colder. That's what Hot or Not's all about here.
Okay, well, look, it's your show, so you can have whatever
Fair
damn,
Thank you
can
very
have
much.
Whatever
all right,
damn rules you want.
Let's
so.
Do it.
Kawhi Leonard, without a doubt, is the best player in the NBA. Hot or not?
Hot. I think he's the best player in the NBA. Nobody seems to talk about this kid. I think he's unbelievable. I love his mentality. He just does his job. He's a straight professional. I love Kawhi Leonard.
They don't talk about him because he really doesn't talk much.
He doesn't, but his play does. I mean, what he did last night, I mean, he basically put him on their back and said, let's go.
Are there more gifted scorers, and does that sometimes lead them to be called the best player in the NBA? Yes. I'm thinking Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. But best player all around? Yeah, right now, this season, Kawhi Leonard is it.
And he has a little facial hair, so he couldn't play for the Yankees, though. You couldn't have that best player.
Don't need him. We have Aaron Judge. He's clean shaven. No big deal. As well as DJ LeMahieu, by the way, who's
DJ LeMahieu.
That's right.
Who Jeff just learned how to pronounce his name last week, so.
Oh, come on, dude.
All right.
The end of the Warriors dynasty is this year, no matter what happens in the NBA Finals, hot or not.
Go ahead. You take that first.
Not. I mean, like, if they lose one of their, you know, top three or four guys, it's not going to wreck the franchise. If they lose half of their, you know, best four guys, that would wreck the franchise, I think. So I as long as they got, you know, a couple Splash Brothers in there, I'm cool with them. I think they're going to be just fine.
I'm going to say hot. I think they're still going to be okay, but I don't think they're the right now. They are the standard bearers of what the NBA's been for the last five, six, seven, 8 years.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be over. I don't think Durant's going to stay. I think it'll be shocking if he does stay. Now, if he does stay, it's something, but I don't think it's going to happen. And you're starting to see a little bit of these guys they're having a hard time staying healthy. I think it's going to be an interesting thing. I think you're starting to see some other teams. Teams like this Toronto team, you're looking at teams like Milwaukee that's getting ready to be very, very good, I think. I think the Celtics have a chance to be special if they can get it together. You know, you look out west and you see Houston there's a lot of good teams out there. I think it's over for Golden State.
Zdeno Chara is the toughest athlete in any of the four major sports right now. Hot or not?
Hot. You're going to play with a broken jaw? You're going to take a puck to your face like that, bleeding out your mouth, and you're going to go on the ice and play? Name one athlete that's as tough as that guy is right now. And he's an old man. He's an old dude.
He is old. He's been playing hockey since ice was young. He's tough. But can we also just call it like it is? Not like wear the full cage. You don't have to worry about breaking your damn jaw.
But he did break the jaw. And he's playing.
Wearing the half cage is absolutely stupid.
He doesn't even wear anything. He's grandfathered into the not. He doesn't have any shield at all.
I'm not even a hockey guy. I'm not a hockey guy, and I'm definitely not a Bruins guy. I love Chara. I mean, that guy is just unbelievable. He's out there playing for his team with a broken jaw.
Jeff, let me at least ask you something that I know you're going to find unpopular and crazy, but I think it bears worth repeating here and asking you. Look, we can all love the gladiator mentality of Chara playing.
Sure.
Is it the smartest thing for him to be out there from the Bruins' perspective? A guy who can't... Look, he cannot open his mouth. So a guy who cannot talk, cannot communicate with his teammates, a guy who can't breathe out of his mouth and has to play at the highest level breathing only out of his nose, is it really the smartest thing for the Bruins to have that guy on the ice in deciding games?
Well, I don't know if it is or not. I mean, I just know that it says a lot for his team. I think he's stepping up for his team, and he's... I mean... I don't know that. I have no idea.
But he didn't work. He didn't play a normal workload the other day.
He played like 18 minutes, which is close to a full workload.
I was thinking there was like a third period he'd been held to like 10 minutes or so. He's a body. He's a skilled body. You need him.
And sometimes it's just having him on the ice.
means something. You know, just having him out there means something. I think it's a great thing he's playing.
Yeah. Look, it's cool that he's out there, but look, it's great when if the running back goes out there too, but he's got a partially broken hand and then he fumbles the football twice and he loses the game because of it. You're going to call that guy a gladiator, or is it dumb that he was out there?
Until they lose a game because of Chara, I'm going to say it's great that he's out there. I think it sends a message to the rest of his team. I think it sends a message out there to the team he's playing that he's going to come out and try to compete to win a cup.
Question 4. The Yankees made a huge mistake in not signing Dallas Keuchel, hot or not?
I'm going to say not. I'm not sure Keuchel's the guy. I think that I think at the end of the day, the decision that they make going forward and going into the end of July will make that decision. They still have Severino coming back eventually. They've got a really strong rotation, I think, at the end of it anyway. And I'm not sure Keuchel's the kind of guy that's going to be the one the tie that binds. He's a soft throwing lefty, good pitcher, but I don't think he's the guy.
I just love openly calling major league pitchers soft throwing.
Compared to the power arms in the league, he's not a power arm.
I know, but like if one of his pitches plunked you in the butt, like it's not going to feel very soft.
Yeah, but we're not talking about me. We're talking about these major leagues.
It's not Jamie Moyer salad.
That's a good point.
I don't think it's a huge mistake either. So yeah, I'm hot on that. That's good.
Well, no, so that would be not. Then the question was the Yankees made a huge mistake.
Oh, yeah. Then I butchered the terminology.
Yeah, he made the mistake.
Made the mistake. E me.
My thought on the Yankees with Keuchel is, look, Keuchel is a good pitcher. He's not the guy that won the Cy Young 5 years ago. He's good for the regular season. I don't think he puts him over the edge in the postseason. But the Yankees do have real rotation concerns, Jeff. Paxton's never pitched a full season practically. He's always hurt. Tanaka's elbow is a ticking time bomb. He's been on the DL or IL already this year. Sabathia's age and injury history is a question. Herman's got innings limits. I would have loved Keuchel for the regular season, but I don't think he wins them the World Series in the postseason.
No, I agree. I agree. I look at it as I think these guys are going to stay healthy. I understand there's been some misuse here, and Paxton's knee is not perfect either, and we know what's going on with CC, but I don't think he's the tie that binds will give the championship to the Yankees, so I'm with you on that.
Minor league story the other day, a guy for the Yankees, double-A affiliate down in Trenton, had a no-hitter in the ninth inning. Actually, it was a team no-hitter, so it was multiple guys teaming up with it, and it was broken up by a bunt single. So it's wrong for a team or player to break up a no-hitter by laying down a bunt in the ninth.
Yeah, Matt Lipka. So basically the story here, Austin, is Matt Lipka plays for the Trenton Thunder, the AA affiliate for the Yankees.
Love the Thunder.
Yeah, they were down 3-0.
It was against the Yankees affiliate.
Yeah, it was against them. Yeah, he plays for the Thunder. And anyway, ninth inning, they're down 3 runs. He bunts, he gets on base, and now the kid's getting death threats. That's just insane for anything. But at the end of the day, I like unwritten rules, but when you're down 3 runs in the ninth inning and you bunt to get on base, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, that's part of the game. You know, whether you bunt in the second inning or the ninth inning, you're trying to win the baseball game. You know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
If you're bunting down 8, I feel a little differently, but I'm also like completely anti-death threat. So
Of course. I mean, the death threat aside, I was adding to the article I read about it. But I think at the end of the day, bunting for a base hit is you know, I mean, they say it's an unwritten rule, but I think you got to defend it just like you would in the second inning.
The context, three runs is manageable if you start the inning with a bunt. Like that's like Brady, you know,
it's ridiculous. He'd be getting the next time I play him, he'd be getting a fastball in his back.
I think that's bullshit.
Whoa, ooh,
sorry. Sorry.
He'd be getting a fastball in his back if he did that to me. What the unwritten rules? Look, again, I've changed my tune on a lot of them here, but come on, you don't bunt to break up a no hitter.
Well, but
you're not bunting to break up a no hitter. You're bunting to try to win the game.
To win the game. I mean, he bunts to get
you're
on
down
base.
3 runs.
Yeah, but you get him on base one more. You have the tying run at the plate.
It's ridiculous. Look, this is not the major leagues either. I'd have a problem with it in the major leagues. You're not playing. No one cares about who wins the International League title in AAA and who wins the AA title.
But it shows a kid that's trying to move up the rankings that he can do this. And he's aiming to try to win a baseball game.
And I guarantee you, when he gets to the major leagues and does that, people are going to pull him inside and say, kid, you ever do that here, you're going to end up with one in your ear hole.
And fair enough, you might be right about that. That's why there's unwritten rules. But the question is, you know, is it a bad look for a team or player to do it? I don't know. I think there are certain situations where it may look bad.
Well,
but I think at the end of the day, if you're down 3 runs in the ninth inning and you're trying to get something going, you're trying to get a pitcher into a stretch or something, and you bunt to get on base, you're trying to win the game. Like, why does somebody's no hitter trump you trying to win the game? You're still trying to beat that guy.
Is it a bad look when the team is up 24-0 and with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and then they're passing 50 yards down the field? Yes, that would be a bad look. Is it a bad look when the team is up 30 with 16 seconds left and goes in and dunks it at the end of the game? Yes, that's a bad look. Those are unwritten rules that are there for a reason.
This is an unwritten rule also. But you're comparing games that are complete blowouts that aren't even close to a 3-run game.
Yeah. It's context. Like you're going close versus not close.
I'd be agree with you, Brady. If it was 10-0 in the ninth inning, then sure, I'd say, okay, that's just stupid. You shouldn't be doing that. You know, get up there and swing the bat. But when you're down 3-0 in the ninth and you're trying to get something going and you bunt to get on base, defend it.
Nah, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Question, the last question, because I know you've been sitting on this all day. Like I was early in the show. I was going to graduate you guys to the week and replace Rich and Arnie with you guys because you were smart. Now you're not so smart.
Well, just for the record, you got a lot of support there because James Shelburne said, listening to you three makes me really miss Rich and Arnie. So great job, Brady. So you got plenty of people out there that feel the same way. So you got your boys on the week. We'll just take care of our things on Saturday. But thanks for listening, James. We love you too, buddy.
There is a huge epidemic of poor officiating in all major sports, and it's not getting enough attention, hot or not.
Yeah, I think that's hot. I think we have a consistency issue in a lot of it. And I think a lot of that's due because I think many officials are not full-time jobs. So, you know, you're kind of putting these guys into situations. And I am not for officials not being there. Like, I know that a lot of people talk about umpiring being gone and you're looking at situations where you've just got computers doing strike zones. I don't want to see that. But there's a lot of inconsistencies with officiating. And we've seen it lately. And no one seems to talk about it too much.
So I'm not hot on this. The epidemic is thinking it's an epidemic.
Good point.
That's the problem. They're humans. They are doing the best they can. Structurally, yeah, they should all probably be full-time jobs so they can focus on it completely.
Right.
And there should be fitness requirements and this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, ultimately, thinking the officiating is the epidemic is the problem.
We certainly talk about it enough. I think the way it's written, it's not getting enough attention. I don't think that's true.
All I hear about the
entire NFL season is catch, not a catch, 2 feet down this, review this, review that.
Yeah, those are rules. Those are rules. We're not talking about,
Yeah, but the officials are the ones enforcing those rules properly or improperly.
Well, but most of the time we're talking about judgment calls I think at the end of the day, to me, I don't think there's been enough. And I think where I'm going to is I think officials need to be prepared better. You watch NFL games, you're watching guys that are really out of shape trying to keep up with some of the greatest athletes in the world. I mean, it's almost impossible for that stuff to happen. And I think at the end of the day, when you're looking at jobs like the NFL or in the NBA or any of these major, I'm not talking about high school sports, I'm talking about the major sports where people's careers live,
right.
You know, whether you win or lose, I think giving them the best chance to be successful on the field. And I think mistakes are part of it. They need to stay there. But it'd be good to see officials get a little bit more, I guess, training or fitness, or whatever it's got to be to make it better.
I don't know if you guys heard it, but like in the distance, I could hear Ed Hockley clenching his fist at Jeff saying officials are out of shape.
Ed Hockley is my man. That guy's in shape. Hey, before we go to break, I have to mention this was just brought to you. That was Hot or Not. It was brought to you by Superb Cupcakes, located in the Taft Corner Shopping Center. The best cupcakes you've ever had in your life. I mean this. I've had them about 1,000 times. I bring them in here once in a while. They're delicious. Check them out at the Taft Corner Shopping Center. Tell Hannah and Joe, Jeff, and Sports Saturday sent you. We'll be right back.
Here we go. We'll get the brass monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Am I supposed to play something called Brass Monkey there? Is that what that's supposed to be?
That's what Aaron normally does, yes.
Okay, well.
Yeah, but it's okay. We can mix it up.
Wasn't on my show notes.
We can do that. No problem at all. Aaron Wells, who's out today. I hope he's feeling better, man.
Yeah, get well soon, buddy.
Yeah, he had some flu
viral respiratory infection.
Yeah, no fun.
10-day IL for him.
That's not good.
Yeah, I don't want him around me right now.
No, especially this time of year. It's a tough time to get sick.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to maximizing the sunshine.
Exactly.
I don't want to be holed up on the couch.
Well, Brady, I appreciate you showing up 3 minutes before to do the show for us. We always appreciate when you come in and do the show with us, so we appreciate that. Thanks for filling in this morning. You've had a very busy week. It's always difficult, I know, to come in on your day off, so we appreciate that. And Austin, my man, like big day today, right? In high school sports, we got a big day at Centennial Field, big day at Castleton, big day at Virtue Field today.
Yeah, I got to hop in the chopper to go over to Centennial to catch D3 baseball. Starts at noon, White River Valley against Virgins. And then right after that, I'll be covering the big D1 game between CVU and Mount Mansfield. So plenty going on there. Alex's hold up at Virtue Field for the D1 lacrosse doubleheader. Right now, halftime at Virtue Field, CVU is leading Burton 9-4. And then in the second game, it's South Burlington against Burton there.
Is there a better venue to watch a baseball game, you know, than Centennial Field, really? Just the legend of Centennial Field, just the beauty of it, the fact it's Vermont, and you got these high school kids on that field. It's a special time in Vermont.
It is cool. I mean, I think it's the second oldest ballpark in New England. I think that, or it's either the oldest
I think
or
it's
second
the oldest.
Okay. Oldest continually operated ballpark in New England, which is really wild. I mean, the thing is 116 years old now.
It's amazing.
It's fun. My favorite thing is like the way that gigantic yard for high school kids, it becomes an equalizer. Like, you really can't afford an error. The game yesterday, like, the difference was a throwing error that allowed two runs to score. I think it was with two outs in the third inning. That was the difference in a 3-1 game. But and like you see it every year. There's one or two, like a pass ball, a wild pitch, a throwing error, you name it. Like, well, can happen.
But is there any place these high school kids will play all season that's comparable to this field? Nothing.
No, nothing.
I mean, that's what I mean. It's literally the biggest field they've ever played.
It's a little unfair, but like it's unfair to everybody.
Unfair, but come on, what a moment to walk on that field and be able to play. And if you think about the players that played out there before you, I mean, think about the names that have played at Centennial Field.
That's a really cool thing I don't even think about, but like you look, I mean, kids step into the batter box, they look over the left field fence, and their picture and name is up on the big screen.
That's very
like,
true.
That's pretty cool.
Or if you're playing shortstop, you know, the Barry Larkin played in the same spot you're standing. You know, if you're out in the outfield, Ken Griffey Jr. was running in the same field. You know, Paul O'Neill was running out there. Chris Sabo played third base there. I mean, that's just a few names, I mean, that have played at Centennial Field. It's an amazing venue. And if you're looking for something to make you feel good today, go watch some high school games out there. And I'm sure these kids will love it. And I always think spring athletes, it's such a rough season for them. You know, their season always starts and it's going to be inside. It takes a long time to get outside. And when they finally do get outside, the fields are not in great shape. It takes a long time to get your feet wet, for lack of a better explanation. And now they're at the end of the year. They get to play in Centennial Field. It's a great day.
Yeah, I think the joke I heard the other day was it's 6 weeks of indoor stuff and then 3 weeks of makeup games.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's
exactly right. One of the cooler things about the Centennial baseball finals, It's a really symbiotic thing between the Lake Monsters and, you know, the VPA. Like, the timing generally is perfect for the Lake Monsters. They get to open the gates. It's a soft opening for them before the season starts. They get to let the kids come in and the fans, and it's everything working as it should at that point.
And the Lake Monsters open up, what is it, next week? I know
Friday.
I think it's Friday. Next Friday, they open up. What an exciting time of year it is to be in Vermont, to be in the Burlington area, be in Vermont to watch the Lake Monsters. If you haven't gone to watch a game, not only is the baseball good, the atmosphere is unbelievable.
It's a great place to spend a summer night.
It really is. And there's a couple of those hot dog nights. You know, it's quarter hot dog nights. You can do some pretty good damage if you like hot dogs. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. This was another great week here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon. Please tune in next week. We'll be back. Guys, have a great week. Austin, enjoy your day. Thanks for coming in today, Jeff. Brady, thanks so much. I am Jeff Paul. Aaron, I hope you feel better, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, you got 35 seconds left, so you might as well.
I'm looking at the wrong count. Actually, 20 seconds. So you might as well tell people.
It was a beautiful van, too.
Stay right here at 12:05, right after we get 12:05 coverage of Tampa Bay and the Red Sox here on 101.3 The Game. And at 5:10, the second game, I am terrible today. And if you listen to 960 The Zone, at 1 o'clock, we've got NASCAR. And then on VMT at 3:30, the Yankees and the Cleveland Indians. We'll talk to you later.
And now's the time to say goodbye.
The Champlain Valley Sports.